Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
The city of Paris is a fortress today. Millions of protesters vote with their feet in support of free speech. The global hunt for a possible accomplice in the shootings in Paris last week may have been foiled by the suspect slipping into Syria. And Charlie Hebdo plans to run controversial cartoon images of Muhammad in its first issue since the fatal attacks on their offices. An estimated, unprecedented press run of 1 million copies. Today we look at the transformed security situation in France as thousands of troops and police are deployed to guard public places, including synagogues. We also look at the people who are doing a much better job in slandering Islam than any obscure French satirists. ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and Boko Haram in Nigeria share media tactics. We'll talk about that. And in the case of ISIS and Al-Qaeda, they may have found common foot soldiers in the Paris shooters. The Obama administration did not send a high-level representative to the rallies in Paris over the weekend. Instead, the administration focuses this week on internet privacy, with two proposals today that may open the door to easier government surveillance of consumers. How the president reconciles the contradictions of surveillance and privacy is expected to be one of the important reasons to watch this year's State of the Union address. But our focus at the top of the hour is on the Paris attacks and what we are learning about what terrorist organizations Saeed and Sharif Kouachi and their associate Amedy Coulibi may have been acting for last week. For more on the suspects, we turn to Michael Schmidt, reporter for our partner, The New York Times. Michael, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me.
So we should note at the top, all three of these suspects are dead. They were killed in the end of the shooting in Paris. But what are we learning?
Well, as you said, the three suspects are dead, but the fourth suspect may be in Syria, which is sort of the most head-scratching thing about all this. Since the conflict there began in last year, the year before, and ISIS really took hold, our fear has been about people leaving that area and coming to the West and launching attacks. Well, that may have been the case here. Now it looks like it's been a safe haven. The travel is so easy in Europe that someone could do something in France, fly to Turkey, and easily slip into the border of Syria and have a safe haven there on the other side of an attack. And that is just something that in this whole thing I had never thought of. The whole thing is that they're going to get trained there and come to the West, and now we're seeing the opposite.
Now, in this particular case, you're referring to the whereabouts of Ms. Boumediene, who is believed to be the common-law wife of one of the late suspects and who made it back into Syria before the attacks began. What do security officials say about the reason for this? Is it Turkey's laxity at the border?
Well, they have a very, very long border, similar like we have a very, very long border with Mexico, and it's very difficult to protect that. And at first, it didn't appear like the Turks were incredibly serious about protecting the border, but they've gotten better in the past few months as the U.S. has put pressure on them. But it is a very difficult border to protect. And if you're in Europe, you can fly to Turkey as if you were in New York, and you could fly to another city in the United States. The travel there is much easier. So you could easily get on a flight from France and fly to Turkey and then get off and then easily pass over the border. And there, no one's really going to be there to stop you. And this has been the problem from the beginning.
Part of the eerie aftermath for those of us who are not as dialed into the security apparatus as you are, Michael Schmidt, is the hearing the voices of the terrorists themselves in a radio interview that was put on the New York Times website and was available publicly. And also, here is the voice of Amedy Coulibi, who's declaring his allegiance to ISIS in this video. We'll listen to him in French, and I'll translate for you.
Vous attaquez la Khilafa, vous attaquez l'État islamique, on vous attaque. Vous ne pouvez pas attaquer et ne rien avoir en retour.
You can hear in there, referring to the caliphate, to the Islamic State, you attack the caliphate, you attack the Islamic State, we are attacking you now, one can't attack and get nothing in return. Coulibi here declaring his allegiance to ISIS, while the Kouachi brothers seem to be declaring their allegiance with Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. What does that say?
It's one of the more remarkable things here is that you see sort of two different threats, two different groups working together in the same instance. We had never really seen that before, certainly in recent times, where Al-Qaeda's affiliate from the Arabian Peninsula, which is widely regarded probably as the biggest threat to the mainland U.S., then ISIS, teaming up with ISIS, which the U.S. is now bombing there, and which with its European partners. And so what we're seeing here is a coordination of groups in a way that we hadn't seen before. And how did that actually happen? It certainly doesn't appear like it's a coincidence. But what is the connection there? We know that some folks from AQAP had gone to Syria to work with jihadis there on bomb making and to train them. But the idea of a thought of a coordinated attack between the two, that was something that we certainly hadn't thought of.
Now, I have to ask you, there are certainly lots of questions being asked about the French security establishment in the aftermath of the Paris attacks. But U.S. officials were the source of a lot of information that was coming out last week. Have you asked your sources if they can answer this question? If we knew here in the United States about the Kouachi brothers, the same level of detail that American officials seem to have known or French officials could have known, would U.S. officials have picked them up or restricted their movements so they couldn't have, like, wandered into a New York Times office and started shooting?
Well, the first explanation we received from American officials on this was that the French had said that there were other things that they were concerned about. There were other threats that they had to put their surveillance resources on, and that's the reason why they weren't following the brothers at the time, or certainly not in the past recent months or even years. So would the U.S. have looked at this differently? I don't know. The United States doesn't have infinite resources to do surveillance. I think the number of people that the government could surveil 24 hours a day would probably be a lot lower than we think it'd be. I don't think it would be in the thousands. I mean, it may not even be in the hundreds. So is that a fault of the French that they said, hey, we think we have threats elsewhere and we need to put our resources elsewhere? Well, certainly, in hindsight, it's clear what they should have done. But I don't know. The United States drops surveillance on people all the time because they don't think that they're a threat or they don't have the legal authority to continue to monitor them. So it's a much more complex question than simply, oh, this was a stupid mistake.
Well, thanks for raising it. Michael Schmidt, reporter for our partner, The New York Times.